You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and I'm one of your friendly co-hosts on this show. And with me, as always, is...
Tristan Riddell.
And we have one of our favorite things in store for you today, and that is one of our lists. We love making lists on To the Journey, and this week we have taken a listener suggestion. This is an older suggestion. I do not remember how long this has been in our queue, but we're finally going to tackle it. It is top five out-of-character moments submitted by listener Ian G. So if you're still out there listening, Ian, we're finally taking this on.
Yes, but before we get into that, we have another listener submission that we are going to use as an intro topic. And this is from Jason DeMauro. He is from New York and doesn't say New York City, so it could be New York State. Mm-hmm. And he asks, what if Voyager didn't get stranded in Delta Quadrant until a later season? So it isn't until sometime in the middle of season two when Voyager gets thrown across the galaxy, or maybe even later. And I responded to him saying, I've never heard this kind of suggestion before. We always talk about what Voyager would be like if it got home like at the beginning of the seventh season or the end of the sixth season, you know, because we wanted to see what it's like to get reacclimated onto Earth and in the Federation and everything like that. But I've never heard anyone say, like, what if they didn't get stranded in Delta Quadrant right away? And you... initially we're like, nah, I don't want to talk about that. Like, no, like that's totally the point of the show. I agree with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, it starts out that way. Like, that was the whole idea.
I 100% agree with you. But here's the thing. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm proposing. Okay, so what if the first season is a shortened season anyway.
Yes.
When it came out, they sold the show as Lost in the Delta Quadrant, Maquis against Starfleet having to work together. So What if the first season, they didn't pitch it as being lost in the Delta Quadrant, but they pitched it as Starfleet is upping the game against the Maquis, and so they're sending one of their best and brightest, Catherine Janeway. So the opening episodes, like season one is basically one long arc, one long story, and it's all about Paris and Janeway working together to find Chakotay and B'Elanna. So, and Tuvok, the story is the same. The story is the exact same way, except Caretaker is season one.
Oh, okay. I see where you're going with this.
Yeah, so instead of a two-parter, it's like 13 episodes or 16 episodes or something like that. Let's say 13. Or maybe even 8. I don't know, whatever. So they don't just go to the Badlands and then get thrown into the Delta Quadrant. They have to go and pick up Tom, like, but the thing is, it's not just the opening scene of them picking up Tom, well, after, you know, like, B'Elanna and them are thrown, but it's Janeway meeting with Admiral Paris, or meeting with somebody else, like, some Admiralty brass saying, okay, giving the mission briefing, and, like, maybe it's kind of like opening up in Undiscovered Country where, you know, Kirk and Bones are talking. He's like, "Where's Spock?" And Jane was like, "Where's Tuvok? He hasn't talked to me in a little bit." And you know, like then Admiral Lee's like, "Yeah, we haven't heard from Tuvok in a long time. We need you to go and find him. And the only way you can do that is if you find someone who's been that the Badlands before." And so this is the opening episode is all about this process, and we cut back and forth between Chakotay working with B'Elanna and Tuvok, who is not known to be a spy, and Tuvok trying to, you know, regain contact, but the reason why he doesn't have contact is not because of the caretaker, but because of some other reason or whatever. And so that's the thing, is that like Tuvok has lost contact with Federation, but it's not because of the caretaker. So the storyline is the exact same way. And so Janeway gets Paris, puts him on Voyager, and they go to Maquis space or wherever the Maquis is hiding. And
the Badlands.
And it's all about the investigation. It's all about trying to find them. Then it's all about Chakotay and B'Elanna trying to avoid detection, avoid them. Maybe they get into a few skirmishes here and there. And Tuvok is trying to do his spy stuff where he is subverting their efforts in order to not be detected. And so there's a couple of narrow escapes. But then they get thrown in the Delta Quadrant maybe halfway through. So, like, in like if this is a 16-episode first season, episode 8, they get thrown in the into the Delta Quadrant. And so we spend more time on the Okampan homeworld. We spend more time, finding Neelix and convincing Neelix to help him out. And so, basically, Caretaker, a two-parter, gets stretched into 16 episodes or 13 episodes. And I think that would be pretty awesome. And then, boom, end of season 1... That's when you get the speech, set course for home, and so begin season 2 exactly the same as everything else.
Okay. When I read this idea, I was not thinking of stretching season 1 into basically being the prelude to the actual mission home. That is a great freaking idea, and I think if Voyager had been produced today, that is how they would do it. Because for one thing, it's serialized, but then right. also, I mean... You can get away with it. It's a buildup to excitement in the way that a lot of shows are orchestrated. And then you've got kind of like this big cliffhanger like, oh, no, they didn't. They didn't strand him in the Delta Quadrant. And holy mm-hmm. wow, what's going to happen now? They're in big trouble. They're out there all alone. And so I definitely see how that would work. Now, when I initially thought about this idea in my head, I'm thinking, okay, they strand him, what, in season 3 or 4? Like,
yeah,
okay,
no,
you're playing around in the Alpha Quadrant with the Romulans and the Klingons and the same stuff we've been used to in TNG. Okay, a lot of people call Voyager TNG light as it is. You're actually going to make that worse to start? Had they actually done that, okay, no, the show never would have survived to even get stranded out in the Delta Quadrant. And if they even had, it would have been, oh, ratings ploy, you know you're sinking, you got to do something drastic, don't you? Mm-hmm. So that's what was going on in my head, and I like your idea way better. And I have a feeling that's what our listener was thinking as well.
Maybe, or maybe he was just throwing the idea out there. But I just like the idea of we get to spend like more time with Kim at the beginning, where maybe we get to see all those things that are referenced. Maybe we see Janeway and Mark together on Earth or on the planet.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Maybe we get to see Kim's mother try to send his clarinet to the ship, and she has to say no. Just like all those little things we get to see, you know, built in. And
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, do we really need to see that? And then on the other hand...
Well, no, do we need to? No, I'm just giving that as an example. Like some of those things that are mentioned off screen or mentioned that happened off screen... we could explore. That's just a very, very minor example. But
yeah. Well, you know what would have been really kind of cool is Kim saying goodbye to his parents because they were so close, just how painful that was on both sides to know that they were going to be apart for the first time ever.
Absolutely. That kind of stuff. Yeah, that more importantly than sending his clarinet, but some stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah, no, that would be kind of cool. And again, I think if they were making Voyager today, it would be something much more like that. And they wouldn't be so rushed to get them stranded in the Delta Quadrant. We would get more background on these characters. We would.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I want you to go over to CBS and pitch this.
When they do the Voyager remake.
Oh, yeah. We can only hope someday they'll do that, right?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's good as the way it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I am really tired of a lot of reboots, but Voyager is one, well, I don't know. I would probably watch it just because it's Voyager.
You know exactly what we would get if they rebooted Voyager. Battlestar Galactica.
Well, yeah, okay. I know some fans are going, yay, and others are saying, boo. Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but you're right. And I don't know. I don't want Voyager to be Battlestar Galactica.
No, we have Battlestar Galactica.
Exactly.
Go watch Battlestar Galactica.
That's that show. We need some semblance of hope in a better future in Star Trek. That's what Star Trek is. Battlestar Galactica is not that.
Exactly.
Boom. Okay. All right. Well, I suppose we ought to return to the main topic of the show, which was our list. But
that's right.
I'm glad you remembered our listener's suggestion, because that totally did not cross my mind, and I'm glad that we did that and didn't wait another week. Now, that said, out of character moments in Voyager, you know what? I had a little bit of a problem coming up with my list. You know, every time that we make a list, I start going through the episode titles on Memory Alpha, And I just sort of run through my head, what do I remember from that episode? What stands out to me? And so when I'm thinking of out of character moments, I go, like, oh, no, 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 maybe. Is that really out of character or is it just bad writing? Because those two things are very much intertwined. And when you have, especially like writers who come in as maybe like a pitch writer or something who maybe don't have a full grasp of the characters, they're going to write things a little differently than, say, a regular staff writer like Brandon Braga. So are some things out of character or aren't they? And I ruled a lot of things out, just chalking it up to bad writing. That said, I still came up with five, and I'm dying to know how many that we have in common, because I think there's some big ones that we're going to cover today.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is that you probably have the big ones. I think I have the little annoyances where I,
okay,
like, I think my list is very much the, like, ugh, ugh, why did they do this? This person totally wouldn't do this. And you probably have the much more intelligent list of, like, the big glaring mistakes that kind of affect the trajectory of the show. But I guess we'll find out.
I might have the big glaring mistakes, but I think those are easier to detect than the little gripes and inconveniences of, they wouldn't really do that. And so I'm glad you're going to point those out, because I ruled a lot of those out, thinking, oh, they're not important enough, or that's really nitpicky. Mm-hmm. But maybe they're not. So, okay, let's get this going. I'm dying to know now. What is your first one?
My first one, and this is in no particular order, this is from the episode One Small Step. And for those of you who don't remember, Voyager finds an ancient spacecraft, the derelict of one of humanity's first manned missions to Mars. Okay, so in this episode, we find out that Chakotay is obsessed with the ancient Mars missions.
Yeah, he
is. From the 21st century. Out of nowhere, he is just he's obsessed with it to the point of he's willing to risk his own life as well as others in order to gain information about the Mars mission and about the pilot, Lieutenant John Kelly. And it's just, first of all, I don't think Chakotay is stupid enough to endanger himself as well as others.
No.
And just for a fact-finding mission and historical accuracy or whatever. And we know that he has an interest in anthropological digs, you know, and in ancient cultures and everything like that. But this is a big step. This is a leap. This is a reach.
Yes.
In order to connect those two. And also, like, maybe this isn't out of character, because it seems to be that out of character moments are in character for Chakotay. Like,
that's actually why I ruled out the entire episode, The Fight.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that, because we found out that he's totally into boxing.
Yeah, really?
But he's a man of peace. He abhors violence. He's a vegetarian, for God's sake.
Well, and when he wants to be.
When he wants to be. But then, like, it's just, they had such a hard time, and they failed so miserably at developing consistent, good backstory for Chakotay. They had no idea how to write for Chakotay.
No.
And then this is just another example of how they don't know how to write for him, because they could have thrown any character in here and the result would have been the exact same thing. It's just like, oh, wow. I'd be like, you know, Janeway's obsessed with the Mars missions. That's weird. Or, oh, Tuvok's obsessed with the Mars missions. That's weird.
Right.
The only time I could think it'd be anywhere remotely on point would be if Tom Paris was the person.
Yes, because he's interested in, especially 20th century technology and history, that time, that era. It's not too far-fetched to say he would have at least a passing interest in space exploration and this era.
And he's a flyboy, you know, like, so, you know, like, he'd be a fan of Chuck Yeager and, you know, and I almost said Cromwell, and Zefram Cochran, and, you know, like, and so, like, you know, John Kelly would be right up in there that list.
It would.
And so that would make sense. And I don't know why they didn't do that. But yeah, so that's my number one.
Yeah, well, they clearly needed a Chakotay story, because it had been 2 years since they gave him one and decided, all right, well, he's elected. Here you go.
All right.
I'm really glad that you pointed this one out. I almost put this one in. And then the whole conundrum of, okay, what is consistent for Chakotay and what isn't kind of peeked into my head. And I almost put this on there. And I kind of did a double take of, well, I'm not really sure, and so I put it on standby. I'm glad you put it on there.
All right, what's your number one?
All right, my number one is actually it's a little bit of a spoiler already. We mentioned it just a minute ago. Chakotay's wavering vegetarianism, where he says in season three that he's a vegetarian. And on occasion, I think Neelix mentions it in an episode, and it seems like he's a vegetarian when it's convenient. But then when he wants to go have lamb chops with Seven, it's fine. Now, you can make the argument, I know, that, okay, anything replicated is not a real animal product, and therefore that fits right into the vegetarian spectrum. Fine. Just for the sake of my sanity, could you please say something about how this replicated food does not technically have meat or something? Just please appease me.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that completely. But that definitely would have been crazy expositional.
I know.
Yeah, it's like Seven to go, like, would you like the lamb chops? Oh, yeah, even though I'm a vegetarian, it's pretty cool that, you know, replicators for the past three centuries, you know, doesn't count on the vegetarian
spectrum.
You don't
have to say that, just, you know, something of the whole, you know, replicated, of course.
Okay, see, that's much more elegant. Okay,
One line is all it would take to satisfy me and make my heart rate go down a little bit and not scream at the TV.
Yeah.
That's all it would have taken. If you're gonna make if you're gonna make Chakotay a vegetarian, make him a vegetarian and stick to it. And if you're not, well, then just don't even give him a characterization. All right, what's your next pick?
My next one. This one, I don't know how to handle this one. This one might be cheating. It's out of character, but it's purposefully out of character.
Okay.
It's actually a part of the story, but I needed to talk about it. I needed to say it. I needed to recognize it. And that's the disease with Kim.
Do tell.
When Kim gets the space herpes, you know, like he
yes.
He goes a little crazy. I mean, like he steals a shuttle. He disobeys a direct order from a superior officer. He has sexual relations with a species that was not cleared by his physician to have sexual relations with. These are all things that Ensign Harry Kim would never do in a million years because his career is too important to him. But that's the whole plot of the show, because it's all about the disease. It's all about love is a disease, or their kind of chemical connection is causing him to do crazy things. And so I just wanted to recognize that this was out of character for Kim, but they recognize it in the show that it's out of character. And this is a moment of growth for Kim because they recognize it's out of character, and he has kind of a tonal shift from season 5, 6, and 7, where he's a little bit more adult. He's not just the green ensign who, you know, he starts taking command of the night shift and everything like that. He starts taking it more seriously. So I'm not saying this to knock it. I'm just, you know, putting it out there for the people to know how I feel.
I'm really glad that you put this one on your list. I struggled with this one as well, and I chalked it up to the writing. Yes, he was meant to be somewhat out of character because he is crazy in love. And I think we've said on the show enough times to give listeners an idea of how we feel about this episode. It's not great.
Yeah.
In our opinions. Yeah. Is it out of character? Like you said, it's on purpose, and therefore I struck it, even though the entire thing is out of character. So there we go.
Yeah, it really all depends on how you tackle our top five list.
Right.
Like, if it's unintentional, out of character moments, then yeah, this wouldn't count. But if it's, you know, just the grand scheme of things out of character moments, then yeah, this is in my top five.
Yeah, it's a tough line because it's not very often, except maybe in sci-fi, where you have characters intentionally doing things out of character.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, what's your number two?
Okay, this one might be another obvious one, but it's kind of falling on the same lines as what you talked about with Ensign Kim, and that is essentially Kes in the entire episode of Fury.
That's on my list.
Okay, this one is so incredibly out of character. It just feels like a glaring bomb in the list of Voyager episodes. Kes comes on the ship, and she's older, and she's angrier, and stop right there. Since when is Kes angry? I can think of one other time. And that was when Tom and Neelix were fighting. And that made her angry because they were stranded on that shuttle and she didn't even know if they were going to come back to, you know, to where she could come tell them just how angry she is at them. That was the one time, and that was very well founded because that was stupid. But in this episode, she's angry about something that's not even real. She has a lot of misconceptions in her head. This is a Kes that we do not know, and frankly, we never should have known her like this. And it's just bad. Really, really, really bad.
I was reading an interview with Jennifer Lean about 5 years ago. I mean, it was an interview 5 years ago. And she was like, somebody asked her, what were the challenges in coming back into the role of Kes, you know, after being gone for so long? And she's like, well, one of the, I'm paraphrasing here, but one of the major challenges was just acting so out of character.
Huh. So she knew.
Yeah, she knew it. She called him on it. She said, like, it was so weird acting out of character and also seeing all these other characters who have changed because they've had growth over the years that Kes was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so glad that she said that out loud.
Seriously.
She recognized that the actor, like, because just think, Jennifer Lean gets the script and goes like, what the hell is she doing? You know, what is Kes doing?
Yeah, she might as well be an entirely different character.
Yeah, like, yeah, it could have been a different character just come, like, it would have made just the same amount of sense where someone we don't know just came in and says, you abandoned me, you left me alone. Everybody's like, what the hell is she talking about?
I think it actually would have been a better episode if Jennifer Lean had come in and played a different alien, same lines and everything, just not Kes. I kid you not. That's how much I dislike this episode.
Even more confusing. Yeah, I know. I haven't found one person who likes Fury.
So help me, if there is anybody out there, please explain what good is in there in it, because this is one that is just so easy to dump. Like, when we get to Essential Trek, this is a no-brainer. It's going to take us 1 second.
Gone. Yeah. Since we both picked one, how about you give your number three?
Okay. How about Janeway almost killing Crewman Lessing to prove her point in Equinox Part 2?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, some people even go so far as to say that Janeway flips her lid and is out of character for the entirety of this two-parter. And I wouldn't go that far. I think in part one, she's pretty just, but in part two, she is essentially Ahab. She's going after her white whale, and it's Rudy Ransom, and she even says to Chakotay, well, if you want to call that a vendetta, then it might as well be. So be it. She knows she's really out of hand here. And yes, what the Equinox crew did was wrong, or what the crew did was wrong. And yes, that's betraying so many Starfleet ideals and whatnot, but I don't know. The only possible defense I have for Janeway just being so dead set on going after the Equinox and getting the Equinox was that was the root of the problem instead of talking to the aliens, which, hey, just saying, it worked.
Right?
But then here's the other thing. This is where Janeway is out of character. Like, think to Star Trek First Contact, where Picard is going after his white whale, and, you know, Lily kind of summons him back to reason. Like, okay, whoa, I did cross the line here. You're right. They got me. Mm-hmm. You know? What Chakotay confronts Janeway, and it does nothing. She doesn't, I mean, it's like it's in one ear and out. She just does not care when Chakotay says that she made a bad call. And I think Janeway has much more compassion for life. She respects life usually a lot more than she does in this episode. And even the lives of those that have killed others. Think Lon Suter. And I agree with Chakotay that she made a bad call, and I think it's downright sad that Chakotay did not get through to her, and so I consider that part of it out of character, definitely.
Yeah, I think those two counts right there. I think that's, I'm really glad that you brought that up right at the tail end, is that it, you know, Janeway respects life too much, especially even those who have killed, like you said, with Suter, and then that Chakotay could not get through to Janeway. I think that's a key thing right there, because I do believe that Chakotay would have been able to get through to Janeway on this issue.
Right. I mean, a lot of people joke, oh, Janeway never listens to Chakotay when he offers his piece of advice or, you know, his opinion. No, she usually takes that into account, but just says, okay, I see what you're saying, but I still want to go with my plan. That's different.
Right, right. That's different.
Yeah, that's different than what she's doing in this episode. You can just see it on her face. The Janeway we love is not there. So what's your next one?
My next one is, this is probably really small, and I'm sure people are going to be like, what on earth is he talking about? But this was a big one to me. Like, this was a personal one to me, and it's something with B'Elanna, and I love B'Elanna. You know how much
we
I love B'Elanna.
Do. Yes, we do.
And I think B'Elanna is a sweetheart. I think she's a good girlfriend and a good wife, and I think she is a loving and caring soul with just a little bit of issues and problems, to say the least. But in the episode Memorial, when B'Elanna gives Tom the TV, this to me is so out of left field and so unlike B'Elanna to do this kind of gesture for Tom. Like, I could see Tom doing this for B'Elanna, but I can't see B'Elanna doing this for Tom. And, like, if we built up to this, like, if maybe, like, she was the kind of person who would show up with a picnic lunch like Tom, or show up, you know, like, energizing with flowers in his hand. If B'Elanna did the things that Tom did for B'Elanna in the past, I would believe B'Elanna giving the TV as this grandiose gesture. But this was just out of nowhere, and it was so out of nowhere to me that that scene was distracting, that I couldn't focus on the plot, because the entire time I was like, and I believe I've talked about this before, but my mom and I were watching it together, and both of us were like, what's going on here? What's going on? Like, is B'Elanna some sort of replicant? Is Tom in the holodeck? You know, like, B'Elanna's not normally this nice. What's going on? What's her game? And it had nothing to do with the plot of the episode.
You thought she was up to something, huh?
I did. I totally thought she had an ulterior motive, or she was an alien. I don't know.
Oh,
I legitimately thought this, and so I had to put it on my list. I, like, sure, call me crazy, and I am. That's fine. You don't have to agree with me, but this is on my list because it was so distracting I couldn't focus on the plot.
I won't call you crazy. I see your point, and I actually have never thought about this as potentially being out of character for B'Elanna, so I find this really interesting. I've always just seen it as, B'Elanna is an engineer, and she does like to build things, and this is a way that she could build something and express her love to Tom. And I don't know, I think as you go through in a relationship too, yes, Tom is much more, I would say, I don't know, don't take this the wrong way, physical in his gestures, like actually beaming in with flowers and stuff like that. That's how
gift giving is his language of love.
We go. That's more what I wanted to say. So there is that. And I think maybe B'Elanna is just trying to reciprocate in a way that Tom understands, because that's how he does things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as you go on in a relationship and you start to understand these things about your mate, then you kind of follow suit a little bit. I mean, that doesn't change who you are, but maybe you make that effort from time to time just to see what will happen and maybe throw in a surprise or two.
Well, I'm not saying you're wrong, and in fact, I think you're making a heck of a lot of sense. But like I said, the only reason why it's on this list is because as I was watching it on the day live, I was beside myself. I was like, she's a shapeshifter. I don't know.
Oh, no. The founders have made their way to the Delta Quadrant, and all hell is going to break loose.
All right. Well, what's your next one?
Okay. This is another one. You know, I just realized I've got three entries for Captain Janeway in my list, and that's probably not fair, but here we go. Here's another one, and you know that I don't like Endgame. This is one of the reasons why I do not like Endgame, and that is Captain Janeway giving into Admiral Janeway's plan. Because after 7 years of saying that she and her crew would make it home with hard work and determination, and even after refusing an offer from Q, she gives into Admiral Janeway because 7 of 9 dies? Mm-hmm. Okay, never mind that Janeway did ask Q if he could send them home in Q2, just a few episodes before. He kind of owed her, though, at that point. I mean, that makes a little bit more sense than that. But, okay, after all this time, this? Really? Why now, besides a convenient plot device, which it was? It just doesn't work for me. Voyager should have earned her way home, just as Captain Janeway always said. And As much as I love sassy Admiral Janeway, something is really wrong with her, and I know what it is. She didn't drink coffee, and therefore I do not trust her.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we've said this so many times that I think Endgame would have been 100 times better if they took out the Admiral storyline.
Yeah.
Just have it be Janeway and crew present day, you know, stumbling upon this Borg whatever, you know, like this Borg wormhole or whatever you want to call it, I can't remember what it's called, and just fighting their way through.
Transdimensional thing.
No, transwarp conduit.
That's what it was. Like that. Yes, that technobabble.
Yeah, have them do that. Just have them have them tech the tech, have them find the way, have them infiltrate the Borg and just do it. I mean, yeah. They already, you know, took out the teeth from the Borg in the previous seasons. Why not do it again?
Right.
And
I don't know why they needed to mess with the timeline. And besides, where was Captain Braxton and all of that? Why was he not flipping his lid?
Yeah, exactly.
It makes no sense.
We dealt too much with time travel and before to show her views on things. And it just... Well, it's really funny that one of yours is Endgame because one of mine is Endgame as well, but not the same thing.
Oh, really? Okay, what's yours?
This one's probably a lot pettier than yours because I think yours is much more the blaring one, but I think this one has had more ripples in the fandom, if I could be so bold, and that is Chakotay hooking up with Seven.
We all know that this is wrong.
This is just wrong on every single level, okay?
Right.
Like, Seven using holographic Chakotay as practice? Yes, I get that.
That was bad enough.
Yeah, it was weird and wrong, but I understood it, and it wasn't real.
Yes.
Okay?
And therefore, you could brain bleach.
Exactly. Chakotay is a handsome man, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, like, Kim is, you know, like, she wouldn't want to use Kim because he's too young. You can't use Paris because he's married.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to use Neelix for obvious reasons.
Poor Neelix.
You don't want to use the doc because that's her mentor in this whole thing.
Right.
In becoming human, and that would have been even awkward. And so you find Chakotay, handsome man, available, single, way to go.
And also Tuvok is married, so you can't use him either.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you. I forgot about Tuvok. Yeah. And so that was weird, but makes sense. In Endgame, it is apropos of absolutely nothing, comes way out of left field, and it's just, Chakotay would not have picked Seven.
No.
Chakotay would, if Chakotay couldn't have Janeway, he would just have fleeting relationships with aliens until they got home. I believe Chakotay would be the George Clooney of the Delta Quadrant.
Oh, yes. And what is so wrong about that? Nothing.
But even George Clooney found his Janeway.
It's true.
Okay.
He did, and I feel like Chakotay and Janeway finally would have made it happen after they got home. So it's not like he even had that much of a wait. I mean, one more episode, dude.
One more episode, dude. And it's just, and even from Seven's perspective, she starts having these emotions and these feelings towards him that we're seeing come out of nowhere. And I just feel like Seven would have to have build in a relationship. Seven would need long-term relationship goals. Seven is not the type of person who would jump into anything, and I feel like she wouldn't just throw her emotions away or invest so much of her emotions into one person with only like 3 dates or whatever, or however many dates they had,
right.
And like to the point where she's crying and breaking things off because she doesn't want him to worry about her not making it or some sort of crap like that. Nothing about it made sense, and it's completely out of character for Chakotay and Seven. But I'm blaming Chakotay because he needs to be with Janeway.
Well, yeah, he totally does. And yeah, you're right. Seven would not just settle for a fling. And even if that is all Chakotay was initially going for, shame on him. You know, okay, I know that she's pretty and attractive and a good catch, but really, dude, come on. I mean, he's even admitted that he's used the holograph or the holodeck before to take care of things. Okay. So from an emotional standpoint, Seven of Nine is in a much more fragile and novice state of relationships than Chakotay is. They are not compatible at all.
Mm-hmm.
Chakotay, of all people who is fairly wise, should recognize this and say no.
Yes.
And, you know, he could even pull the whole "it's not you, it's me" thing. and make that work, and that would be okay. And even though Seven would initially be hurt, I think she would eventually get it and then move on to somebody else. But just, everything is so incredibly wrong with this idea, especially throwing it in there at the end. And I didn't even see chemistry between Robert Beltran and Jeri Ryan. I mean, I felt like it was, a brother kissing a sister.
It was, it's just, and that's the thing. Not only did the characters not make sense together, the actors themselves had no chemistry on screen.
No, gross. Okay, moving on.
So we're on to your last one. What's your last one?
Okay, my last one is Janeway's so-called habit of fiddling with her comm badge in Dark Frontier. Oh! And Chakotay calling her out on it. This is a double out-of-character thing. Like, Chakotay, she never does this before or after this episode. And Janeway, you're doing it just to humor Chakotay, right? Right?
Oh, this, I am so happy you brought this up. This pisses me off to no end
because
every single show does this. Every single show in the history of the world has done this, where they do this whole thing where they say, "Oh, you're totally gonna skip out on class today, aren't you? What are you talking about? You always hang your backpack on your left shoulder instead of your right when you're gonna skip class. Oh, you know me," and we've never seen that before in Saved by the Bell. You know, like, it's crap like that. It's all the time, and it's just it shows some sort of it's fake intimacy.
Thank you.
It is them trying to say Chakotay knows Janeway so well that just by fiddling her comm badge, he knows the crap's gonna hit the fan. They've been around each other long enough that they could have developed something else. They could have drawn off of real activity that we've seen before.
Yeah. Oh, heaven forbid if they would have done that, because they do spend some time together, and yeah, they do know each other that well. But you're so right, it's fake intimacy because it's not real. She never does this, never will again, and it's crap. And they could have actually used a real, genuine moment and I think had a much better scene, and we would have all loved it that much more, and instead we got this. And that's my big, huge, glaring gripe about Dark Frontier. I otherwise like it, but... Ugh.
What they could have done is, like, maybe, like, she could put her hands on her hips, you know?
But she does do that all the time. I mean,
yeah,
but I know what you're saying.
It's something that she does, you know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, though. Some little behavioral thing, like, maybe she takes a sip of coffee every time that she's a little bit nervous or something. I don't know. But this is something that they should have at least maybe planned a little bit in advance to maybe throw a couple in right before this episode to show us and get it in the back of our brains, even subliminally, like maybe we don't even know what's actually happening, but put it in the thought process there so that we can actually recognize it, like, oh, you know what, she has done that. Like, I mean, make it maybe a little more obvious, but use something real for crying out loud. All right. Well, I'm glad we got through this list now because I'm angry. like Kes in Fury, I am angry.
For no reason.
For no real reason, because I love Voyager, but yeah, talking about these concerns has made me angry. All right. Well, out of character moments aren't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. Here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm. Standard Orbit.
You did good, Captain Kirk.
Is he in that last shot or not?
Yes, he is. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh.
Oh, wait a minute. Did they pull a Weekend at Bernie's or something? Like, they just hold him up there, He's okay. Well, it's cool.
Earl Grey.
Daddy, do pets have a Nexus too?
The Pexus.
Kirk had a dog in the Nexus too, didn't he?
Oh, Butler. Butler is now Shadow. So we have the adventures homeward bound of Butler, Porthos, and Spot. Will they make it back to their owners in Montana?
The Orb.
Well, apparently, and did you find this interesting, Matthew? Apparently, the Navark reports directly to the prophets.
Which is awkward because they don't always show up for meetings, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, you never know what time the meeting is really going to be, right?
That is true. It could have been yesterday and you might have missed it.
The Ready Room.
Do you think this episode would have been so popular and remain a fan favorite if the Enterprise had been overrun with zebra mussels?
To the journey!
It's so average American. It's like Joe Smith. And no offense to Joe Smith, it's just, I could have tried a little harder. I mean, come on.
Might as well call her Jane Doe. So far, not off to a good start. So far, I'm judging you, Shar.
Give me a moment.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And I remember like being like in midair, having this conversation with his brother and saying, this could be the best Star Trek ever, and then just like landing on the ground.
Is it a metaphor for how you feel about Voyager as a series?
No comment.
The 602 Club.
The young adult novels have their own framing devices that tie in to The Force Awakens. And I think that if they had put those front and center, maybe even expanded one of them or what have you, I think that would have served the strategy better. I definitely do.
Literary Treks.
Well, that really is the bottom line, you know. And I think it's particularly difficult with this group of characters because in some ways you're looking at folks who literally are the brightest and the best, right? So in some ways we need them not to have feet of clay. We need them to be so much better and stronger than we are so that we have something to shoot for.
Women at Warp.
There's always a touchstone, and this was as close to a touchstone as they ever got with Pulaski.
Plus she banged Riker's dad.
Oh, Andy.
I'm sorry. I just think it's so funny.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available in just about every way that you can possibly access us. The best way, though, and you know what I'm going to say, is, drumroll please, iTunes. Yes, we haven't had a new review in a while. I think that needs to change. I think somebody needs to step up. What do you think?
I think so, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So come on, guys. Get on it. We've been stuck at, I think, 112 star ratings for a while and 80-something written reviews. Let's step it up a little bit. Please show your support for the show because that is the best way to help us rise in the rankings and help other people discover the show and all of that. I mean, the more that happens, the better off we are in their system. More people access podcasts through iTunes than any other device. So it means a lot, and it only takes a few minutes of your time, and it's completely free for you. So it means the world to us, though, and therefore you're doing us a big, huge favor if you haven't already. Now, if you do have some spare change, and you want to help out the whole network, not just TTJ, go to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a patron of the network and becoming a subscriber. There's various donation levels out there for you, and depending on how much spare change you have, it can be a little or a whole lot. And there's all sorts of great things that we can give you in return for that. And this is a fan-funded network, so every little bit does make a big, huge difference. We want to thank our associate producers, Aaron Harvey, Jamie Deuce, and Kenneth Tripp. You can follow Aaron on Twitter. His handle is GeekFilter. So we especially want to thank them because they supported To the Journey, but we want to thank all of our patrons because they make this happen these days. So thank you all. Now, Tristan, next week, what do we have in store?
Next week, we're tackling two questions that we got during our AMA last week that we didn't have enough time to address. Those are, if Voyager was rebooted today, you know, like a la J.J. Abrams, who would you cast and why in the roles of Janeway, Chakotay, Paris, blah, 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 with current actors of, you know, of the stage and screen?
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is actually branching outside of the world of Voyager, which I think is always fun to do. And it's which characters would you choose if you were creating a super crew from all eras of Star Trek, and what captain would you put in charge? Those two questions are huge questions, and that's more than enough for one show. But you will have to find out who we pick next week.
That's right. So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!